Okay, wait, are we on? I assume we're on. Welcome everyone. Thank you for joining tonight's Zoom class. The topic we'll be talking about today is encouraging courage. And we're both going to explore some sources about courage, specifically as they relate to Pirkei Avot, as well as some like psychological or philosophical background to the topic of courage. I'll add in advance that you should just interrupt me whenever you want for any reason, because that'll feel much better than talking for half an hour straight. So feel free to do so, but also no pressure to do so. Okay, the goal for today is to do three things. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to define courage and explore just a little bit about the definition and its implications. The second thing we're going to do is we're going to explore some sources, again, in Pirkei Avot and in Pirkei Avot's commentaries. And finally, we'll discuss some of the psychological background and some practical approaches to thinking about courage. It's a topic that I became a little bit more interested in as a result of circumstances, which one day someone will listen to this year and wonder what circumstances I'm talking about. But as of now, I can just say circumstances and everyone knows what I mean. So that's very exciting. But I think it also has a lot of application, not just in quote-unquote circumstances, but also far beyond that. Okay, step one, the definition of courage. The definition I'm going to use for our purposes, and every philosopher or psychologist has their own assumption about the definition of courage, but the one that I'm going to use comes from a book called The Courage Quotient by a Dr. Robert Biswas-Diener, I believe is how to pronounce his name. I'm happy to share the spelling for those who are interested. And he defines courage as a willingness to act towards a moral or worthwhile goal, despite the presence of risk, uncertainty, and fear. So there are, I think, three major elements out of this definition. The first is that it's about a willingness to act. It's not just a feeling that you have. It's also, I guess willingness is a feeling, but it's a certain kind of directed feeling with a certain kind of goal. The second element of the definition is the moral and worthwhile goal that it doesn't appear, according to this definition, that it would be brave to do something recklessly stupid without having a goal in mind. And the third element is the risk, uncertainty, and fear, the idea that you want to do this moral, worthwhile thing, but there is some apprehension about so doing and the possibility of failing in that pursuit. Okay. A couple of like elements to think about in the context of this definition. So just focusing on this moral and worthwhile goal for a second, I just mentioned that it appears that if you have a bad goal in mind, that wouldn't count as bravery or courage. I'm using bravery and courage interchangeably in this year. For example, if one was a bank robber, one might have to be very brave in order to rob a bank and risk the repercussions and being caught. By this definition, we wouldn't consider it bravery. And I think that there's something intuitive about the definition that generally, if we think that what someone is doing isn't worthwhile or is immoral in some way, then we're not going to consider it brave or courageous if they do it. However, this definition is broad enough that it includes multiple kinds of goals. For example, we usually think of courage as, the most common manifestation of courage relates to the military, you know, some feat of physical strength, maybe firefighters or soldiers, someone who's, you know, risking their lives in pursuit of some goal. But based on this definition, that needn't be the case. And we could talk about other kinds of courage, like moral courage, the willingness to stand up for what you believe in, even if it'll cost you socially or even if it'll cost you economically. Even psychological courage, some psychologists discuss the idea that you'll like tackle some element of who you are, and that could be a scary prospect. And the worthwhile goal isn't, you know, success in the military, but it's some other pursuit. Okay, observation number one. Observation number two is that according to this definition, bravery is only applicable when there is risk, uncertainty, and fear. This opens up like a much broader machloket in the realm of courage studies and courage psychology. Does courage mean that you're not afraid of something dangerous? Or does courage mean that you're afraid of something dangerous, but you're willing to do it anyway? So to give a concrete example of this, you could talk about, you know, two firefighters who run into a burning building. So the first firefighter runs in and doesn't experience any fear. And the second one runs in to, you know, save a person and does experience fear. Who's braver, the first one or the second one? the truth is, it's unclear. It's not, you know, you could define the term courage differently to accommodate for it. According to this definition, it seems like the second one is brave. The first person is foolhardy, is reckless. There's something about it, about him that we might say is, you know, he doesn't really understand the risk. You would be afraid if you knew what running into a burning building meant. And if someone told you they weren't afraid of doing so, we would say that they're, for lack of a better term, crazy. I will say that this definition might not be the only definition. And I think as we go through Perkei Avot, we might find that that is challenged. Spoiler, it is. Other than that, you're unmuted.
Yeah, I want to just nitpick your example. Because you can kind of split the difference between being a foolhardy, not recognizing the lack of general awareness, and then talk about two other types of people, one who, like, emotionally feels it. That would seem a more productive distinction to make, because, like, your other fellow is not just lacking in courage, but in common sense.
Right. I think the reason I think the example I used the example I did is because I have a hard time imagining that a person understands the danger of running into a burning building and doesn't feel fear. Now you're right. It could be that there's a person who knows that if they run in, there's a 50% chance that they'll get hit by a falling beam, and they still don't feel fear about that. I think that person, I speak with very limited, psychological or psychiatric background, but I think that would be something that we'd be very concerned about if you knew of imminent danger and didn't feel fear about it whatsoever. So you can imagine such a person, but I do think that it's not as common and isn't, I guess, like, normative in that way. Does that work for you, Elenatan?
I just wanted to kind of make it more specific, make the necessity for your definition more specifically about defining courage and not just about not being nonsensical. In other words, if that's your foil, then that person has other problems too. And so I think it's more productive if you want to define courage as someone who recognizes active risk, then kind of the nekuda isn't the fact that he's aware of it, but the nekuda should be the fact that he experiences it.
Okay, I'll concede. I don't think it's obvious in the context of courage that it has to be an emotional experience as opposed to an intellectual one. I can imagine a world where someone is aware of risk and goes in anyway and doesn't feel fear, but knows that he's doing a dangerous thing on behalf of someone else. And we might consider such a person brave also. We might consider them clinical in some sense, but it's not as obvious to me that wouldn't be courage. I think your point is well taken, though, that if we're going to think of courage as a reaction to the emotional experience of fear, then you're right, that it makes more sense to think about it as someone who has the knowledge and still doesn't have that experience. Point number three that I want to make about this definition that we started with is that the bravery or courage is defined as the willingness to act towards a moral and worthwhile goal. So that raises the question, which is, in my mind, an open question, about if courage is inherently virtuous, it's inherently good to be courageous, even in the absence of, the moral worthiness of the goal that you're pursuing, or is courage a sort of, like, meta-virtue that enables other virtues to exist? There are a number of compelling quotes along these lines. I'll just mention one or two. Churchill once said that courage is the first of human qualities because it guarantees all the others. Without courage, you're unable to pursue other, what he calls human qualities. I assume he means some kind of moral qualities. C.S. Lewis, you cannot practice any of the other virtues very long without bringing this one into play. The idea that, like, courage supports your pursuit of kindness, of generosity, of any other kind of good that you want to accomplish, suggests that courage is ancillary. One like Nakamina, for lack of a better term, might be a situation where I'm brave in pursuit of not something foolish and not misunderstanding, just a goal that's not particularly important, but I manifest an immense amount of bravery in its pursuits. So would we consider such a person, greatly virtuous, someone who exhibits a ton of courage, or is courage in the pursuit of insignificant goals itself kind of insignificant? also, I think, to my mind, a little bit of an open question. We're going to see when we look at some of the sources in Avot the goals to which courage is put, and that may help clarify this third issue as well. I'll pause now before we start the Avot section. Any comments, observations, besides the ones we already discussed? The perfect thing about having a cup of beverage next to you when you teach on Zoom is it gives you just enough time to let someone say something if they want to without dragging on if they don't. So, to Avot.
Excellent idea, by the way.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I'm going to steal that. The beverage cup, which allows you to not have an awkward pause if nobody pipes up. I think that's a terrific idea, and everyone who teaches over Zoom should be taught that trick.
That's true. When I advertise this year later, I'll make sure to put that as the part of the title. Tricks for Zoom teaching. Okay, let's get to work on some of the sources. I mentioned before, and I'll mention now, that we are focusing mostly on Pirkei Avot. This class was developed in the context of a course on Pirkei Avot. There are many other sources worth considering in our canon when we talk about courage. For the best collection of those that I'm aware of, Rabbi Yitzchak Blau has an article in Tradition called Is Courage a Jewish Value? That doesn't focus on Avot at all, but quotes a pretty extensive range of sources from Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim about the subject. So there's a lot more to work on here, but I'm constrained by the title of the course that I took this semester. So let me share my screen and we'll get to work. Okay. Here we go. I'm happy to share these with anyone who's interested later on. Okay, so encouraging courage. There are a couple of Mishnayot and Avot that either, it appears to me, discuss courage or are interpreted by some interpreters as discussing courage. The first, and the home to the most extensive discussion on the subject, is the Mishnah in the fourth parak of Avot, Ben Zoma Omer, after skipping some of the other examples, Izehu Gibor, Hakovesh et Yitzro, Shneamar Tov Erech Apayim Gibor Moshel Berucho Milochet Yer. So who is a Gibor? And I'm deliberately leaving that word untranslated at the moment. It is one who is Kovesh et Yitzro, who subjugates his Yetzer, whatever a Yetzer is. And that certainly goes afield from what we're doing now. So reading that Mishnah, I think, al pipshuto, doesn't necessarily refer to courage, either physical courage or moral courage. Just it seems to refer to strength, right? What does one need strength for? Who is one who is strong? One who is able to subjugate their own internal desires, that requires a greater degree of strength. And it doesn't necessarily have to do with any kind of fear that one faces. And indeed, I think that's like the standard interpretation of the gvura that we're talking about. The most concise formulation I saw was in the Pirkei Moshe. Sidebar, I didn't do any of the background to identify who these people are, to situate them in their historical context. That's work that's generally valuable to do, but for the purposes of our discussion, that's not as relevant. End sidebar. So the Pirkei Moshe uses this formulation, that gibor hu asher lo yecholat v'koach gadol neged ha'oyev. A gibor is someone who has the ability to prevail against an enemy. He has the ability and great strength. It has nothing to do with his motivation, it has nothing to do with his will, or the obstacles he might face. It's just that skill. But there are some commentaries that seem to take in that direction. First, and this I think I can say with confidence, first historically, and on the sheet, is Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah talks about this idea called courage. Gvura, being a gibor. And he says, just skipping to the end of the first line, Ugvura ha-guf, shehi ha-koach ba-adam gam be-behemahu. This physical strength, physical gvura, that belongs to a man, is also belongs to animals. Ki lechulam yesh koach lisa masaot, umehem yotar al chavrayam. Because they all have the ability to, carry heavy burdens, and some of them are even better at carrying heavy burdens than others. So we can't talk about a person having gvura and having that be some unique virtue. It seems important that for Rabbeinu Yonah, it can't be that we're discussing, insignificant skills or abilities. We have to be discussing lofty things that apply to humanity that are morally valuable. And that'll be a theme in, I think, most commentaries on Avot. You have to find some, sort of lofty idea to which the mission of Avot refers. And so he says, "Vazel lo diber ben zoma ki lo nekrit gvura, ach mi gvurat halev. the only gvura that Ben Zion was talking about is the gvura of the heart, which has two elements. So yesh ba shnei kochot. One, liot gibor b'molchama velo yifchar libo le'olam, sort of being giborious, having gvura in war, and not fearing. And number two, v'gam koach kvishar hayetzer, v'nechleket ben adam v'habehema kilo levehemu gvur halev. And the second element is the ability to subjugate one's yetzer, which resembles the first interpretation we saw in the Pirkei Moshe. The reason I quote this source is twofold. The first is that it suggests that, according to Rabbeinu Yonah's interpretation of Ben Zoma, that there's some element of courage, of overcoming fear, involved in being a gibor, and that seems to be a good thing that Pirkei Avot is praising. And number two is that it weighs in on the question I raised before, right? Is courage a question of overcoming fear or of not having fear in the first place? And it appears, I think, from a reading of Rabbeinu Yonah, that it means not having fear in the first place. Or at the very least, going from having fear to not having fear. You know, the ideal is to be in a situation where you're not overcoming anything, it's just not there in the first place. So that is the interpretation of Rabbeinu Yonah on this Mishnah. The Merkavah HaMishnah raises another element of this discussion, which is worth thinking about. It's actually, in some ways, in opposition to things that we've been saying before. He describes in this first underlined portion the reasons that having physical gvura is less than having, you know, Kovish at Yisro level gvura. And that's why Kovish at Yisro was like a high level of gvura. And he says there are actually three reasons why it's easier to be a gibor in war than it is to be a gibor in oneself. Number one, because in war you have other people to help you, whereas in your own internal psychological moral struggles, you're really, in some sense, on your own. Number two, you have your, you know, physical tools to help you, whether your physical strength or your weapons. And the third element I find interesting, shlishit, sheyitgaber ha'adam al chavero l'siba hechrichit, shu mifached mimenu shemayaseh l'ra v'rotzeh l'akdimo. So this actually, you know, in discussing the element of physical courage or physical success, physical strength, it raises the element of fear as a positive, that when you're afraid, that gives you the ability to be more successful in some ways. So I think it's just a little bit of a counterweight to the idea that fear is an obstacle, which fear can be in many contexts, but there are times when fear will also be a motivator. And we may come back to that as when we think about how to facilitate or manifest more courage in ourselves, that element might be part of it. The third thing, which I found to be very exciting, was this passage of the Tiferet Yisrael, where he basically seems to define courage for us in a way that's a little bit different from our definition, but a way that I found useful. So he says, a Kovish at Yisro, you know, a gibor isn't one who has physical strength to be able to, you know, kill lots of people. That's not what we mean. You know, animals are better at that than people are. Rather, aval tihila tohu, one, she'enu rach levav. So this echoes the Rabbeinu Yonah before, not feeling fear in one's heart. Number two, mishtamish b'gvuraso l'tachlit na'ala, and having a, what we saw before, moral and worthy goal. Ve'enu choshes v'nezak ha'gof, that goes back to not feeling fear. So it sort of echoes in some ways the definition that we've been seeing before. Obviously taking this sort of subtle and important difference is that he thinks that fear is, again, not part of the equation, not something that's overcome by courage. So that's one Mishnah and the commentaries that are relevant. The second that is a little bit more on Pirkei Avot's playing field, so to speak. Pirkei Avot, you know, is a text that talks a lot about like living the good life, moral virtues to have, and with a specific emphasis on Talmud Torah. So thinking about, you know, controlling one's yetzer is very on brand for Pirkei Avot. One of the most central things in Pirkei Avot, though, is that the good life, such as it is manifest in learning Torah. And so I don't want to say Torah is the most commonly discussed subject of Avot, but it's definitely among the top. And here's another area where courage is manifest. It's a quote from Hillel in Perek Beis Mishnah Hey, where Hillel says, among other things, lo habayshan lameid, one who is embarrassed will not learn. And the simple and sort of well-understood interpretation of this line, I quoted Shvat Yisrael, but I don't need to summarize it inside, is that a Baishan is someone who is afraid of social ostracism, of appearing to be unintelligent, who won't know Torah, and his unwillingness to ask questions means that he'll never learn. So in pursuit of the moral and worthwhile goal of learning Torah, one has to overcome one's fear of appearing to be an ignoramus. And in this case, it appears that the fear itself is not something, at least that I saw in the commentaries, is not something to be overcome. It's not something, I'm sorry, that shouldn't exist. It's something to be overcome by the pursuit of Torah. This final example, I quote less for the implications for courage and more just to emphasize a couple of points that I think are worthwhile to have in mind when one learns Perkei Avot in general. It's this third mission, which appears later than the first two, in Perek Hay, where Yehuda ben Tema says, have a az kenamer ve kal kanesha raskit svi ve gibor ka'ari, should be a gibor like a lion. And this is, you know, famously the first line in the Shulchan Aruch is essentially a quote of this Mishnah. That among the things one should do is one should be gibor ka'ari to rise up in service of God. It is worth noting that these two commentaries, and it's a common theme in Perkei Avot, interpret this Mishnah in light of previous Mishnayot. So there's this view that Avot is in some way holistic, where the interpretation of a previous Mishnah can inform the interpretation of this Mishnah. All our Mishnah says is you should be gibor in order to do God's will. It doesn't explain exactly how, but these two commentaries bring in other Mishnayot to supplement that knowledge. Rav Matityah and Hayatzari, after mentioning again not feeling fear, explains that the goal is that one should, you know, serve God well. Ulaze amru, ezehu gibor hakovish et yitzro, quotes our first Mishnah. And the Magen Avot of the Rashbaz, the Tashbetz, does the same thing. He says, you should be a gibor. Why? Ki ein habayshan lameid. If you're not brave in this way, and you aren't willing to ask questions in the context of your learning, then you won't learn as per our previous Mishnah. There's a point to keep in mind when one learns Avot in general, that there is this element of like intertextual interpretation, where if it's appeared in another place in Avot, I could use it to interpret this Mishnah in Avot. Okay. I will now take advantage of a drink pause for any observations about these Mishnayot, these sources, before we move to our final section. I feel like I shouldn't have pointed it out. I feel conspicuous. But here we are. Okay. To a little bit of the psychological literature. So the book that, again, has been dominant for me in this conversation is the book The Courage Quotient. And the courage quotient actually refers to this little equation you see right here. The courage quotient is actually... Oh, yes, please.
Are you going to go back to any of your rabbinic sources?
At this point, I will not.
Okay, because you just brought up an interesting question, which really opens up a broader realm of inquiry, which is, when is it appropriate to use courage? And when do Chazal think that courage is appropriate? Is it always appropriate? Is there times where obviously, like, you have the Rambam's kind of axis of Midos, where if you go too far, courage itself turns into foolhardiness. But even assuming you stay within the realm of normal courageous activity, are there points at which it is improper, or do we assume that it's always proper? I mean, the very use of a Sefirot Hashem implies that perhaps other places like courage would not necessarily be the right tactic.
Right, so that's a great point. The truth is, I think that's in some ways neutralized by my earlier definition of courage. If courage is defined as bravery in the pursuit of a moral and worthwhile goal, then a definition, like, of course courage is always going to be valuable in the sense it's always being put to a moral or worthwhile goal. Now, what goals were considered worthwhile by Chazal? That's a fantastic question. There is an open question, I think, about if Chazal considered physical courage, right? The courage that one manifests as a soldier in war is a particular virtue, or if that at the very least means nothing, if not less than nothing. But I think, yeah, that when we talk about the context of La'asot ritzon avicha shebashamayim, in some ways that could be a very broad definition. Anything that we consider morally good in Judaism, having gvura, which in this case, you know, translated as courage or bravery, in pursuit of that goal is going to be valuable. So you're right, we could decide like what areas are valuable to Chazal. Is it only in Talmud Torah? Is it in I guess, conquering one's own Yetzer? Could it be just generic and broad? I think it'll really just depend on what we consider valuable to Chazal. This is a topic I think that Rabbi Blau discusses in further detail in his article. I recommend looking at it for a greater expansion of rabbinic and post-rabbinic sources. But I think that probably suffices. Okay, so right back to the psychology. So the courage quotient actually refers to, you know, what looks like a mathematical equation, right? The courage quotient is an act of division. It's your willingness to act divided by your fear. So the greater your fear, the less courage you will, you know, have or manifest. And the greater your willingness to act despite the fear, the greater degree of courage you will manifest. So in terms of, you know, building courage or becoming a more courageous person, there are obviously two strategies. You want to raise the value of that quotient. You either raise the numerator or you decrease the denominator. So you either increase your willingness to act or you decrease the amount of fear that you feel. At this point, I'm going to stop sharing the screen because I'm out of sources. But this is a couple of strategies that are brought, I shouldn't say brought down, different kind of sparring perhaps, in thinking about both lessening fear and increasing one's willingness to act. And I'm happy also to hear from the present company things that have worked for them or can be, useful in their, pursuit of these areas. So first, reducing fear. So there are a number of factors, I think, that go into feeling fear. Part of it, as we mentioned before, is like the unknown, lacking information about a situation. So sometimes that can make you brave. You don't know what the danger is. And sometimes it can make you afraid when you don't know what the danger is. That's something that I think people are certainly feeling a lot now. So gathering information so that there's less fear of the unknown is something that definitely can be valuable in terms of reducing fear. In a more therapeutic context, and this is something I don't necessarily recommend people trying for themselves at home, is exposure therapy. You could, slowly expose yourself to the thing that you're afraid of in order to build sort of like an emotional tolerance for that thing. Again, I would strongly recommend this in more of a therapeutic context than doing it yourself, but something to keep in mind as well. There's the element of just like physiological responses to fear. One tool, for example, progressive muscle relaxation, that, in which you sort of like tense up all your muscles and then release that tension. And that just physiologically speaking reduces fear. There's evidence that works. So the number of strategies for reducing fear, both in the moment and more broadly, different strategies are going to work in different contexts. In terms of increasing willingness to act, so there are a couple of other factors that can make us more willing to act even in the face of fear. Some of them were actually mentioned in some of the sources, right? The idea that when you're at war, you're with other people, and that, increases your ability to succeed in war, I think can be a factor in terms of increasing your willingness to act, doing it collectively, having a group that are in pursuit of the same goal. Developing a mindset in which failure is positive. This is less true in war, where failure is less positive. But in other contexts, failure in a learning process is a catalyst for growth. So as long as we don't fear failure in that way, I guess this really goes back to reducing fear more than it is to increasing willingness to act. But it's also a factor. And one that I could speak personally and say that I found valuable is when you try to like adopt a certain identity or put a certain hat on as part of motivating your own behavior. I remember a conversation I had in yeshiva. It was in the context of a vod with one of like the administrators of the yeshiva. And he said that he has these conversations with students who, would love to be the kind of guys who come before davening to have a seder, but they're not that kind of guy. And this administrator always responds, well, why don't you do it? And then you would be that kind of guy. So I think there's some idea there. Oh, we're running out of time, but we should finish. So that should be good. There's some idea that, when you look at yourself and say, I'm the kind of guy who does this, I'm the kind of guy who does that, that'll actually motivate you to act in the way that you think you ought to. I've seen testimonials from doctors these days in quote-unquote circumstances where they express that of course they would be terrified because of the pandemic and they're in the middle of it, but they're just doing what doctors do. So it's not about them, it's about the role that they sort of see themselves in. That's what would increase their willingness and ability to act even in the face of fear. So see, that strategy is one that has particularly stuck with me. And I think that there are lots of ways in which to manifest it. One of the reasons I think it sticks is that it is pretty generally applicable. So just to take an example of a fear, we could talk about, let's say, fear of public speaking. So I'm afraid of public speaking, and I've learned all there is to know about public speaking, and I'm still afraid of it. Okay, what do I do? Well, if one puts oneself in the head of someone who speaks publicly, right, it's my job now as a teacher that I'm going to get up there and speak in front of 25 students in our overpacked classrooms. That's just what teachers do. That's just the identity that you're going to put on. So what sometimes helps me is taking a minute before doing something scary and sort of putting myself in the mindset or in the shoes of a person who does this, where it's just the natural thing to do and not a particularly brave or insightful action. So I think that's a tactic that I think would be valuable to try. Definitely happy to hear if you have other strategies that you think have worked or haven't worked. But let me just quickly recap. What we've covered today is three basic elements of a discussion about courage. The first was a discussion of a definition of courage and the implications of that definition in a sort of broad, a slightly more philosophical sense. In the next portion, we move to a discussion of some of the sources that appear in Pirkei Avot, and in the commentaries in Pirkei Avot that elucidate elements of courage and in some ways challenge those earlier definitions. And the third thing that we did is discuss a little bit of the psychology and the practical takeaways when one has a conversation about courage, and some things that we can do in our own lives to increase our willingness to act, even in the experience of fear. I'm now going to turn off the recording because I've gotten what I need, but I'm happy to stay on with any other observations that one might have.